Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Sunday, July the 9th, and as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to look at this amazing week that saw the president in Europe, where he gave one of the best speeches that I've heard in quite some time, certainly in the last 8 years, defending Western civilization and speaking on behalf of freedom in Poland. I thought it was a great speech by President Trump. We'll get into tonight what I think is happening. It's interesting, the countries in Western Europe that used to be the countries that we used to be aligned with are the ones that seem to be further from the United States. Eastern Europe, the countries that used to be under Soviet communism, like Poland, they're the ones who seem to understand a little bit more what Mr. Trump is saying. It's an interesting situation. The G20 meeting, I guess it depends who you ask. If you ask Angela Merkel, maybe she didn't think the president was that good. If you ask others, maybe he was. Bill has a very interesting post about Angela Merkel. We'll talk about that as well tonight. CNN, they've had a very bad month, and now it's hurting where it really hurts, which is in the ratings. And I don't know how much longer they're going to keep this up. At some point, you would think that somebody at that network is going to start screaming. The U.S. economy, we're getting these monthly jobs reports. The last one was pretty good, but still a bit mixed. We still don't have that good report that maybe we are looking for. North Korea continues to be a problem. The president had conversations with China about that. The Democrats ought to be listening to people like Mark Penn, who just wrote a very interesting article giving them some advice about moving back to the center. They shouldn't be listening to Maxine Waters, who is a major embarrassment at this point. Speaking of an embarrassment, the mayor of New York, I'm sure Bill has a few thoughts about that, decided to go to Germany to protest. Of course, the city is running so well, he had the time to go to New York. On top of that, there was a very unfortunate shooting of a police officer there in New York, a terrible shooting of a mother with three children who was one of the police officers there in New York City. ISIS is going down, and that's good news. There's a ceasefire in Syria. That's hopefully good news. Sarah Palin versus the New York Times. I don't know if she's going to win, but she's getting a lot of good publicity, so we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm hoping that she wins, but, you know, once you get into this legal territory, it's hard to tell. And Ivanka Trump is once again, she's once again being attacked by many people on the left. I don't know why. She's an amazing young woman. I don't know why they don't like her. Maybe it's because she's Donald Trump's daughter. I guess that's about the only thing I can say. Let me say hello to Bill Katz. Bill, I think we're going to get some rain over here. How's everything in New York?
Yeah, actually, it's one of the most beautiful days I've seen in New York this year. It's just an absolutely perfect day, and I wish I had spent more time outside. But I was inside laboring to save my country. So, you know, what
all right. Well, you were informing all of us through Urgent Agenda.
Yes.
We appreciate that. We appreciate that very much. I just wanted to quickly say, I mentioned Ivanka Trump there at the end. I hate what is being done to this very good young woman who is the mother of a couple of children, by all accounts a very nice person, but because she's Donald Trump's daughter, they're going after her for just about everything, Bill. I mean, just picking on her for everything, Bill. I think it's very sad.
I think it's very sad, too, and especially when you – can you imagine them doing the same thing to one of Barack Obama's daughters or to Chelsea Clinton? I mean, we got Chelsea Clinton making speeches all over the place on issues she knows nothing about, and all she does is, oh, it's wonderful. She's in public service. But the issue this week was that at the G20 conference, when the president is not at the table, usually a representative is there, simply to represent the president, and he asked her, apparently, to go and just sit in his place. She is 35 years old. She's old enough to be president. She's a member of his administration formally. Remember that. And acquits herself beautifully in every situation. But you had report, I mean, these columnists, some of whom should certainly have known better, especially the women, Anne Applebaum, who I thought much more of, the Washington Post, who referred to her as a New York socialite. She is in the social scene, but she could have spent her entire life going to parties and didn't. She's very hardworking, built a business, participates in public affairs and women's rights issues. What does she want? I mean, she's just a magnificent Ivanka Trump, and I think we're lucky to have her.
I agree, and by all accounts, you know, even before she became, I mean, but when I say she was always famous, I guess, in New York, being
yes.
here in Texas, I knew very little about her other than I knew Donald Trump had a daughter, but I didn't know much about her. Her activities, but by all accounts, Bill, by what I've read, she was very involved in not just the social scene, but she was involved in charities. She did a lot of work with helping people raise money for this cause or that cause. I mean, she's a very nice person, and so is, frankly,
yes.
her two brothers are also very nice contributors to society.
Yes.
I just think they're going after her. I just think it's very sad that people are. Because I've never seen this done to anybody before. Obviously,
well, there,
not Obama's
there doesn't seem
daughters.
To be any, you know, there doesn't seem to be any control on the part of the left at all. I mean, the use of language, the use of descriptions. Howard Dean, the former Democratic National Chairman and something of a wingnut himself, referred to the Trump administration as a criminal enterprise. I've never heard of him accused of anything criminal. I mean, all you do is get one headline in a newspaper, an anti-Trump newspaper, and they take it as gospel, and they go out and make these statements. And, you know, I don't know what they're going to say about Melania Trump, who's turning out to be a magnificent first lady. I mean, she just acquits herself so well and is very much international. Maybe they'll call her next the gold digger or something like
right,
that. It seems
right.
that, yeah, I mean, can you imagine? The last time I heard a presidential child ridiculed was actually during the Carter administration when Jimmy Carter said that he spoke to his daughter Amy about nuclear weapons.
Right.
And people thought it was very funny because Amy was the young child at the time. But to have the child of a president himself or herself ridiculed, like that. We did see a little of it during the Reagan administration when Ron Reagan Jr. was laughed at a little bit, and but nothing like this. Well, it's inappropriate that she's sitting at the same place where the president sat. I mean, for goodness sake. I mean, no matter what. No matter what Michelle Obama did, it was all wonderful. It's terrific. It's perfect. It's superb. I just feel it is because she is Donald Trump's daughter, and they have to go after her. And maybe they resent her for the fact that she's beautiful and brainy at the same time. But
right.
It's gotten too much, and I think the people of the country sense that it's gotten too much. I think you made a reference in the opening to CNN's declining ratings, which are declining very rapidly, in fact. And I think people just caught on, and they don't like what they see. Yeah,
I agree with you, and I think that CNN is paying the price. MSNBC is a special situation because that's 2 to 3 million people every night who just want to tune in and hear every one of these crazy stories. And I guess
yes.
they'll continue to be okay for you know, eventually they'll get tired of the stories, I suppose. But let's begin with the president in Europe. I agree with you. I thought the First Lady was magnificent in her performance as a First Lady, which is, after all, a symbolic type of position where you stand by your husband and smile and do those kinds of things. That's what first ladies have always done, and she did it beautifully. Now, as far as this trip is concerned, Bill, normally these trips take time to really determine what came out of them because so much of it is symbolic. But the symbolism, I thought, was fantastic. The images of the president and the first lady and the speech in Poland. I mean, I thought the visuals were fantastic, Bill. And the visuals matter a great deal when everything is on television, Bill.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting to see the reaction of people to all this. Of course, on the left, they are hysterical. And now the argument is, well, the U.S. went to the G20 and it stood alone. Well, number one, if it were true, what would be wrong with that if we thought we had the best position? Number two, we're not standing alone. We're standing in opposition to some fashionable West European opinion. And to the American press, that's all that counts. To the American press, the world is Western Europe, especially cafes in Belgium, where they spent their junior years abroad. You know, and that to them is the international community. So when Angela Merkel says something, that's important. I mean, she's European. They have nice museums and things like, you know, and that is really the way these people think. In fact, if anything, the president has been very engaged. He has certainly been engaged in Asia. He has had the president of China to the White House. He's had the prime minister of Japan to the White House. Just last week, the new president of South Korea to the White House, and has been deeply involved in issues involving Asia, deeply involved in the Middle East. He's had the prime minister of Israel and a number of other Middle East leaders to the White House. I mean, the idea that this man is isolated or is pursuing an independent policy just for the heck of it is ridiculous. He is an extraordinarily involved president, but he is living in an age where the truth matters much less than the impression, and the press is trying to give an impression of him as an incompetent, isolated leader. Not true at all. There also, I'm sure you noticed the fact that in response to his magnificent speech in Poland, in which he talked about Western values, he's being accused of being a racist. Even Jeff Zeleny of CNN, who I really surprised me, because I thought he had more sense, he said, that's not a speech he could have given in too many places. Oh, yes, he could. He could have given it all over the world. And he could have given it in any American state, with the possible exception of the state of Lower New York State and the state of Beverly Hills.
Or the city of San Francisco, maybe. He couldn't have
or the city of San Francisco. Yes, the nation state of San Francisco.
That's right, that's right.
But it's ridiculous to think that speech had in any way anything to do with racism. But Zeleny said, well, it was a white speech. It wasn't a white speech. He spoke about Western values. Is he not allowed to speak about Western values? If somebody spoke about African values, would they be accused of giving a black speech? It's gotten to the point now where it's gone so far that, as we noted a minute ago, I think people are turning off.
I think so, and you're exactly right. I mean, what are Western values? And you know, Western values are the freedoms, like freedom of press. If you're a woman, I think you're pretty lucky to be living under Western values. Certainly under Western values, you get a lot more freedom. You get opportunities to go to school. You get opportunities to work. I couldn't believe that reaction to the speech, because I thought promoting Western values was something that I wish we would hear that more from these politically correct, weak leaders of Europe. But yet in Poland, they didn't think it was racist at all. They thought it was right on. Keep talking that way,
exactly,
because we agree with you.
Yes. And they want to be part of the West. But you know, kids are taught in school nowadays, in too many schools, that the West is responsible for most of the problems of the world, and the West is this, and the West is that, and the West is racist, and they believe that any problems we have, we brought upon ourselves. Well, when you're brought up to think that way, the speech will sound bad to you. But I'm hoping that most Americans have been able to overcome that kind of nonsense and to realize how lucky they are to be born in the United States.
I agree with you, and I think that most Americans heard it that way. I really do. I think that most Americans didn't hear any racism or anything like that. They simply, you know, when I think of Western values, I think of freedom, of, you know, the democracy and the rule of law. That's what Western values mean to me, not anything to do with race, because the fact is that there are countries in the West that are not white, countries in Latin America that are majority black and all of that. So I was very angry when I heard that. But you know, again, I go back to the point I made, Bill, about the Western Europe versus Eastern Europe. You know, for years we've been defending Western Europe, protecting Western Europe, and they've turned out to be these politically correct wimps who are, you know, frankly, I don't know how they're even going to survive with the number of babies that they're having. And then you look at Eastern Europe, Poland, Romania, these countries, they seem to have a much better future. I just had a friend who went to Romania. He came back, hey, there's a lot of good things happening in Romania, and they love the United States. I'm not sure you can say that about going to France, Bill.
No, I'm afraid you can't. And Germany, which is beginning to act like Germany again. I mean, Angela Merkel goes around lecturing us. Who does she think she is? They exist as a free nation because of us. You know, we could have permanently broken up Germany after the Second World War. We didn't. It was divided for a certain number of years. We took the risk of reuniting Germany, and it is a risk. And the attitudes there toward us, toward President Trump, I mean, maybe they admired Barack Obama because they could push him around, and they did. But it's a different ball game now. But I fully agree with you. I mean, this nonsense in Western Europe has gone much too far. And in Eastern Europe, the very same ideas that the Western Europeans laugh at, in Eastern Europe, they embrace because they know what it's actually like to live under communism.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. In the West, communism or socialism is some kind of a beautiful theory that college professors talk about. In the West or in Eastern Europe, they know what it is. It's Soviet tanks putting down freedom in Czechoslovakia or Hungary or wherever it was. But I am surprised a little bit with Angela Merkel. And I think part of the problem, Bill, too, a lot of this is dictated by domestic politics. I remember back during the early days of the Iraq War that we used to hear all this opposition from many European countries, but particularly from France. And then we learned later that Saddam Hussein had basically purchased half of France's political class with the oil for food program. And he had all these French politicians in his pocket who basically were saying that they were against the invasion because they were basically benefiting from the relationship with Saddam Hussein. So, you know, sometimes these politicians in Europe, frankly, are pretty sickening, for Bill.
I think so. I mean, I know there are certain members of what people here think of as elites who are very enamored of European politicians, and I remember one European spokeswoman after George W. Bush's election sneering at him, saying he knows nothing of European opera. I think Americans look at that and they say, so what? When did that become a job qualification?
That's right.
And, but there are people here who say, oh, they're so much more advanced over there. They're so much more sophisticated in Europe. No, they're not. We are the more advanced nation. We have to save them. They've never had to save us.
That's right. Well, I think many Americans would have said, well, George Bush may not know anything about opera, but he knows a heck of a lot more about country music than you do.
So that's right.
Probably what, but they would have said, but they're so snobbish, these individuals. Let's talk a little bit about CNN before we take a break. They're in very bad shape. I mean, the ratings are really killing them. And I thought this, they've done a lot of things over the last month, but I thought this latest one with the video that they edited a video, I'm not exactly sure whether they edited the video or misreported on the video about the First Lady of Poland, who they were saying did not want to shake
yes.
the President, President Trump's hand.
Yeah,
it turned out that...
It's such a silly story.
Yeah, such a ridiculous story, but reminiscent to the one about taking the Martin Luther King bust out of the Oval Office. I mean, it's just an absolutely idiotic story. But Bill, you worked in the New York Times, you worked in media. Why wouldn't someone who does something like this, editing a video and literally talk about fake news? That's what it was. Why wouldn't somebody like that lose his job? I don't understand how you could hurt your company to this extent and not lose your job, Bill?
Well, I think that person should. But I suspect the reason that person has not been dismissed is that what he or she did had the approval of higher-ups. And they know that if that individual is fired, that individual will go to the press and say exactly who authorized the work. So there would be an embarrassment factor there. But I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, it's you watch something like CNN, and you really don't know if you are getting an honest story. And that's very sad, because they have very capable people there.
They really do, and that's why it surprises me that some of these capable people, I always thought Jake Tapper was very good.
Yes.
And I don't watch him every day, but I always thought he was real good when he was over at ABC. And I don't know if he's gotten involved in all of this or whether he's holding back a little bit, but he's one that I should know better. I mean, he's a very talented journalist. They have others who are very good, like you say, at that organization, but they are killing themselves at this point. This is not Trump hurting them. These are all self-inflicted wounds that they are
That's
suffering
right.
from. And this article, I mean, this piece about the First Lady of Poland, and then going after that young man who apparently had done the wrestling video. I mean, it just seems one after another. And I don't know how much longer. I have a theory, Bill, that they may not go out of business, but they may change their name. Because sometimes when organizations really get in trouble or their brand is in real trouble, they change their name. So I wouldn't be surprised if CNN changes their name just to get that off of people's minds, Bill.
Yes, they can change their name to Ivanka.
Exactly.
That would do it. They'd get a big audience, I guarantee
they sure
you.
Would. They sure would.
Well, I think what's needed at CNN, and I don't think they can get very far without it, is a change in management. This is a function of management. Management can change that network any way it wants to within an hour. And Jeff Zucker is known to be a flaming liberal. He's the head of CNN. And I'm afraid that's what it's become, just a flaming liberal anti-Trump network that claims to be the most trusted name in news. I wonder who trusts them. I haven't met anybody there, so, you know.
Well, their ratings don't show that anybody's trusting them at all, Bill. And
no.
I don't care whether you're a liberal or a conservative. At the end of the day, you got to get ratings. And if you don't get ratings, it's going to be pretty lonely. That's all I can tell you. Because it is based on ratings. That's how they stay. That's how they stay in on the air. It's all based on
right.
ratings. Let's take a little break, Bill. When we come back, we'll talk a lot about the economy. We'll talk about the Democrats and a few other things as well. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, where I think we're going to get some summer rain tonight, Bill. So I'm sure we'll hear from Al Gore. We'll have an explanation about our summer rain here in Dallas, Texas, Bill.
Well, Al Gore, yes, he's on the case. He's on the case. And no matter what it is, it will be caused by climate change. Now, that's another
right.
thing that was very interesting, wasn't it? At the G20, Trump held his ground on climate change, and I'm glad he did. I think more and more people are demanding that more research be done and more specific answers be given before we change everything we do here because of a theory that doesn't seem to be working out too well. And I'm glad that Trump stood his ground.
I agree, and I think for many of us, we talked about this a month or so ago when it was an issue, or when we pulled out of these accords. I think for many of us, the problem was not that we didn't believe in science, but that we didn't think that China should get away with doing nothing. I mean, that was my problem with this agreement. If you're going to have an agreement, and we're supposed to do something, other countries are supposed to do something, but China doesn't. Well, that's not much of an agreement, Bill. I mean, I don't know why I should sign an agreement that doesn't require the number one polluter in the world to do something, Bill. So that was always my problem with it. It was not an agreement.
That's right. And, of course, it never passed the Senate. It was never submitted as a treaty, which is the way Barack Obama did things. He went around the Constitution, made it basically an executive agreement, so Trump can reject that executive agreement anytime he wishes. I think that it's a very, very bad agreement. It is prejudiced against the United States, just as the Iran agreement is a very bad agreement. And I'm very proud of President Trump for standing up in both cases for the right thing.
Right. And everybody keeps talking about the G19 in the context of climate change. But didn't Saudi Arabia, who was part of the G20, didn't they basically say, we're not going to get into a fight with Trump over climate change? I think they said something like that, Bill. So it wasn't like the other 19 are in complete agreement over the Paris Accords.
No.
They may have signed them, but it's not like they're in total agreement or in disagreement with President Trump, Bill.
No, I would point out that no one is guaranteeing that they're going to live up to those agreements. They may announce one day that, well, we've had some technical problems. You know, it's interesting to hear the European countries lecturing us on this because so many of them are in arrears on their NATO debts. They're supposed to, by agreement, pay a certain percentage of their gross national product each year to help finance the military activities of NATO, and many don't. And Trump has brought this up, and, of course, they were horrified to hear it. You know, it's like a thief being called a thief. And you know, I don't want to be called a thief. These items I've taken, I think I deserve them, but I shouldn't be called a thief. But, I mean, the German foreign minister, who's a really arrogant guy, you talk about German arrogance, I mean, a really arrogant guy, said this is not something that we should be accused of. Well, I have a little news for the German foreign minister. Maybe if you acted a little bit better, people would not accuse you of lying, of bullying, of chasing false gods. You know, they occasionally might look at their own behavior.
Right. Well, and again, going back to the Paris Accords for a second, my problem was exactly that I don't really know what they were agreeing to. And then if they didn't fulfill those requirements, what penalties were there for the countries that didn't fulfill them? It's a little bit like NATO. You know, they participate in NATO, but they have not paid their fair share over the years. And I don't know how you can look at the mothers and fathers of the American young men who may have to go to the Ukraine or may have to go somewhere and defend NATO countries. I don't know how you look in the eyes of these parents and say, we want you to defend us even though we're not even paying our share in the agreement that we're asking you to, or that we're basing your defense on. I mean, I think that's the part that the Europeans need to understand, that these young men who are going to go into battle have parents back here who don't want to hear that the Europeans don't want to pay for NATO, Bill.
I think you're absolutely correct. The trouble is that there is an attitude in Europe of arrogance toward America as a civilization. They look down on us. They regard themselves as the superior civilization. America is the child of Europe. Well, it is true that America is the child of Europe in certain respects. It is also true that the people who came here didn't want to be near their European parents, so to speak. They didn't come here because they liked Europe. They came here because they wanted to get away from Europe. And I wish that the Europeans were sometimes a little bit more sensitive to that.
Right, and I agree with you. I wish they were a little bit more sensitive. And as you know, our son was in the army a few years ago, and that was one of the things that always irritated me about the Europeans. You know, the fact that we're supposed to be in an alliance, but they're not paying their fair share. Well, I'm sorry, that's not the way it works. If I have to pay rent in a particular building and I don't pay it, I get thrown out, or I certainly get evicted, or whatever the case is.
Yes.
And I think maybe it's time to speak that way to the Europeans, But one more thing I wanted to say about this, Bill. I think that a lot of these differences between the United States and Europe are what I would describe as cultural. Things like, for example, abortion and same-sex marriage and just attitudes. This is a very different Europe than Europe 30 or 40 years ago that was much more traditional in all of those things, Bill. This is a very different part of the world today than
yes,
it was 30
it
or 40 years ago. And I think that's where I think the shock is. We're almost like living in two different countries, but two different set of values, Bill.
I think that's true, and I think that there are many educators in the United States who are doing everything they can to make the United States more like Western Europe and trying to undercut our traditional values, trying to demean our great men and women. There is that tone in American education that we thought would never come here, but it has come here, and I just hope that our young people will be strong enough to resist it, because they have
yes,
to resist.
I agree with you. The U.S. economy, Bill, there was a report, whether it was last Friday or the Friday before, a jobs report. The jobs reports appear to be getting better during 2017. But, you know, they're still mixed. You know, one can go different directions with them. But the one thing that we do seem to be having, Bill, is a much better mindset. It seems like there's a lot more confidence in the economy and in the future. And that's a hard thing to measure, because confidence is something intangible, but confidence is a big part of any recovery, Bill. And that's what I see in these economic reports. I think there's a sense that the guy in charge knows what he's doing. That was not the case for the last 8 years, Bill.
That is exactly right. You know, you use that word confidence, and it's a very important word, because around the world in parliamentary countries, when the chief executive is thrown out of office in the middle of a term, it's because he loses what is called a vote of confidence in his own parliament. And that word confidence is tremendously important. And it operates at different levels. It operates at a rational level. It also operates at a gut level. There are just certain leaders who have our confidence because we feel in the end they will do the right thing for the country. I think Reagan was one of those leaders. He had a visceral attachment to the American people, and they kind of understood each other. On the other hand, there are leaders who don't inspire much confidence. I mean, Barack Obama was well liked by people. He was, he seemed to be a likable man. He carried himself very well, spoke very well, but you didn't feel any great sense of confidence in him. I never heard anyone say, in the end, he will do the right thing for the country. Never heard anybody say that. And I think one reason was that there was a gut feeling about Obama that he didn't really like the country, whereas that was never said about Reagan. I mean, Reagan loved Americans. He thought his countrymen were great. Obama made it very plain he didn't think his countrymen were great, that we were filled with defects that only he in his magical way could cure. Sounded like Carnac on The Old Tonight Show. And I think that was sensed by the American people.
I agree. And confidence is so important. You're right about President Reagan. I think FDR probably projected confidence at a time when
yes.
we needed it. Obviously, I don't personally remember that. But, I mean, when you listen to these radio chats that he had on the radio with the American people, you could tell that people trusted FDR. They felt that he was at least flying the plane in the right direction. But I'm happy that confidence is back. As far as the tangible reports, the jobs reports, the numbers, I still think we have to wait a little bit longer to make a lot of conclusions, because I still think some things are up in the air, Bill.
I think they are. I think a lot of damage was done during the 8 years of the Obama administration. But yet now we've had some good jobs reports. I don't think it's time to give President Trump complete credit for those jobs reports. Some of them go back to the Obama administration. But I think we will not know much more about the economy probably for another year. The Trump effect is taking effect, but there are people who are warning that the stock market is too high, that we've put too much confidence into it, and we could have another major disruption. So let's see what happens. All we can do, is to wait and hope that the decisions made will work out well. I'd also point out that the Republican Party in Congress must learn to become a governing party. Right now, all of this is basically an opposition party that happens to have a majority. But they fight among themselves. They don't seem to be able to settle arguments among themselves. And they have got to produce if they are going to win the midterm elections next year. And if the Republicans lose the midterm elections and the House and Senate go over to the Democrats, that will be absolutely catastrophic for the Trump administration.
Absolutely. Things like health care and
yes.
And obviously they'll
tax
pick
reform.
Up the impeachment, tax reform, they'll pick up the impeachment and all of that. So you're exactly right. I hope that Mr. Trump understands that he better get very invested in having the Republicans do something. But I think a lot of these Republicans, Bill, are also they're also going to get primary challenges if they don't get their act together, because
that's
people
right.
are disappointed, particularly with Obamacare. Now, I have to be honest about Obamacare and say that I have always felt that the best thing to do is repeal, maybe wait 3 years or give people like 3 years of Obamacare until something else comes up, and then send it to the states. I've said this before. I'm not that crazy about a replacement, because I think a federal Republican plan is probably not going to be that much better than a federal Democrat plan. There's still too much federal government in both of them. But they have to do something. They can't just they cannot just argue among each other and argue technicalities. They need to pass something and move on to the next one, which is, I believe, going to be tax reform, Bill.
Tax reform, yes, later this year. And they have to get it done this year. They really do. And they have to produce a visible result for the American people. This administration came to office basically saying, they may not have used this phraseology, but basically saying, we are interested in results. We're results-oriented. They have to now bring those results. And it can't go on much longer than this, because the Republican Congress does not seem to be operating in one direction.
Well, and the good news for the Republican Party is the Democrats, I guess, who seem to be
yes.
in just about an even worse situation. Mark Penn, who I believe used to work in the Clinton administration, or was an advisor to Mrs. Clinton back in 2008, he wrote a piece over at the New York Times or the Washington Post, one of those, advising the Democrats that they got to come back to the middle, and making what I thought was a pretty rational case for the Democrats. But then you have people like Maxine Waters. You wrote about her at Urgent Agenda. This lady is an embarrassment to the Democrat Party.
Yes,
I mean, I don't know. How much worse can it be than Maxine Waters, Bill?
Well, I think there may be a way to go. I mean, you've got people in the Democratic Party. I mean, Maxine Waters is one of the worst, but you have the national chairman who curses in public in front of children. You have the brilliant Kamala Harris of California, who had to be reprimanded 3 times by her committee chairman because she couldn't keep her mouth shut, and also, by the way, uses foul language in her speeches without any hesitation. So there are many people competing for the crown of worst Democrat. I think it is probably held today by Maxine Waters, but she's one out of many.
Well, and they just recently wanted to put through an idea based on the 25th Amendment to remove Donald Trump from office, or they wanted to do some kind of a psychiatric study. We talked about this last week. Well, that's just
yes.
insane. I mean, that's not what the 25th Amendment is for, Bill.
That's right. It's for disability, and they are empowered by the 25th Amendment to set up an investigatory panel to make a judgment as to suitability. There are no definitions of that, by the way. And I would imagine that if the Democrats take over the House of Representatives next year, and I think it is a possibility, that they will impeach Trump. The impeach simply means to call into question. The House impeaches, but the Senate actually tries the individual who was impeached. And very few impeachments have actually worked out. And we have had one president... two presidents impeached. One was Johnson who was Lincoln's vice president and became president when Lincoln was assassinated, Andrew Johnson. And then we had Bill Clinton, who was impeached and was tried before the U.S. Senate. In both Johnson's case and in Clinton's case, they were acquitted. Usually that simply means that the opposition didn't have enough votes. Now, in the case of President Trump, even if he loses the House of Representatives and gets impeached, it is highly unlikely that the Republicans will have enough votes in the Senate to remove him from office.
Right, because it would take 67, I believe, to remove him, and I don't think that there would be 67. They were not for Bill Clinton. I think with Bill Clinton, it was 55-45. That's how the vote in the Senate went, pretty much along party lines. But I was going to say, Bill, that for the crown of embarrassment, maybe it's not Maxine Waters, maybe it's Mayor de Blasio of New York,
who's
turned out to be an absolute joke. This is also an embarrassment. This guy goes off to what, Hamburg to protest?
He goes off to Hamburg to protest and also to meet his son, who has a summer internship in Germany. But he does it right after the murder of a New York City police officer, and he does it just before a new class of police officers was to be sworn in, and that was supposed to be a rather solemn ceremony this year because of the murder of a police officer. He just ignored it and went right off to Europe. But look, Bill de Blasio is a Marxist. He was a devotee of Fidel Castro and of the Sandinistas. This was all known to New Yorkers, and they just didn't care. And it is not true, though, that they will blindly vote for a Democrat, because this is a city that elected Rudy Giuliani and then Mike Bloomberg, who was a mild Republican, but called himself an independent, but had been a Republican for a while. You don't have to be a dyed-in-the-wool liberal Democrat to be elected mayor, but you cannot be thrown out of that office unless there's somebody there to throw you out. And if there are some villains in this piece regarding de Blasio, it's the leaders of the Republican Party who don't even put up a fight. I mean, don't they realize we had a Republican mayor named Giuliani, and you can have another Republican mayor if you have a terrific candidate and get behind him or her? It's just unbelievable. There is a mayoral election in November in New York, and de Blasio fully expects to be reelected, even though nobody can find anybody who likes him.
Exactly. Well, I just think that, you know, New York City, the most important city probably in the United States, has a mayor who, like de Blasio, and a city council that hosted a terrorist in a parade. I think it's an embarrassment for the city of New York. But you're exactly right. Every person in New York that I talk to doesn't like de Blasio. Now, I'm not suggesting that it's a scientific survey, but it's probably 10 or 20 people that I've spoken to. Nobody likes him. Nobody likes the city council. But they keep winning, Bill. I don't know how they do it, but they keep winning, Bill.
Well, yes, and I think de Blasio was actually elected with about 18% of the electorate voting for him. A lot of people stay home on Election Day. They assume the election is a foregone conclusion. I think most people feel that de Blasio will be reelected, having no record of any kind, because people will just go to the polls and press that Democratic lever, especially in some neighborhoods where you have boss control and machine control. That's what they're told to do, and they will do it. And it is a great tragedy because he is really doing harm to New York. We have a very serious subway situation here in New York. The subway is breaking down. And he does not seem to be terribly interested. He wanted to go to Germany to take his political stand. I don't know if he had his Che T-shirt, but I'm sure it was packed. Maybe he just hasn't worn it yet. But that is the kind of a person he is. He is a leftist. He's not a liberal. And the people of New York just didn't want to accept it, or they did accept it and just didn't want to talk about it.
Well, they thought maybe he would outgrow it. But he hasn't. He hasn't outgrown it. He's been as I said, never vote for a politician who went to Cuba for his honeymoon or to the Soviet Union for his honeymoon. Those are not usually the kinds of politicians that we should be voting for. But you're exactly right about New York. I mean, I don't live there, but I saw it when I was there last year. I mean, the city is crumbling in so many ways, and I don't know what's happening to these blue cities, whether it's Chicago or New York. I mean, a lot of these cities seem to have aging infrastructure. And I think the problem is that instead of taking tax money and investing it in infrastructure, the tax money is basically subsidizing a lot of social services bills. That's what I think is happening in California, where the social, where the infrastructure is falling apart as well, Bill.
That's right. Infrastructure is falling apart in many American states, and a lot of the money goes to subsidize the public service unions who are running and participants in the state and local governments. It has been said about California that there are enough people on the public payroll in California to swing a state election, which means that the people who these public service unions negotiate with are really at the mercy of the public service unions for their jobs, because the participants in the public service unions are the ones who cast the votes in elections, and they elect the people they negotiate with. It's a ridiculous situation. Many states cannot pay the pensions that are promised in public service agreements. And so as a result, what you have is a series of states, a series of cities that cannot provide quality service to their residents because they have so much to be paid off in terms of creditors, and those creditors must be paid.
That's right. We're going to take a little break, Bill. When we come back, we'll talk about Syria, we'll talk about ISIS, and we'll talk about Sarah Palin, who's in a fight with the New York Times. We'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's do one more segment with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I just wanted to say one more thing about these cities. I have a very good friend in Chicago who tells me that the property taxes now in Chicago, instead of supporting infrastructure, police, those kinds of things, are now basically going to the pensions. So when you pay property taxes, instead of paying the police and building bridges and, taking care of the streets, it's now going to the pensions. That's pretty scary, and that's happening from what his friend is telling me.
Yes, that's exactly what is happening, and very often these states and cities don't actually have the money to pay those pensions. The pensions are obligations. They're contractual obligations. They must be paid. But very often they have not put enough money into the pension funds to pay them. I don't know what happens when these pensions come due. I guess they borrow the money or they tax people more, probably borrow more to pay this. And the attitude of many of the administrations in these states is, well, when the problem comes up, I won't be here. My term will be over.
Right.
I mean, if you look, for example, at a state like Illinois, it's in desperate trouble. But the states around it aren't. Indiana, which was run by Mike Pence, is not in trouble. Scott Walker's Wisconsin is not in trouble. I don't think Iowa, under Terry Branstad, is in trouble. But Illinois is in big trouble. And the number one word in Illinois is Chicago. Chicago is in big trouble. They cannot pay their bills. They cannot solve their crime problem. New York largely solved its crime problem. But you'll notice nobody wants to ask on any of these so-called news programs, why was New York able to solve its crime problem and Chicago has not been able to solve its crime problem? Well, the words in New York are two words. It's Rudy Giuliani. We had a mayor who said this must not go on, and he made sure it didn't go on. But they cannot say that. They're almost religiously prohibited from saying that on a place like CNN, because that would mean giving credit to a Republican mayor, and they won't do it.
Right, or they'll call you a racist because you're bringing that up.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
And they'll go down that road and react that way. Well, let's talk a little bit about ISIS. You have a post today about ISIS apparently going down. It appears that the end is near for ISIS. It's going to be bloody. It's not over yet. It's going to be bloody, but the end is near. And that's probably a good thing on the ground, but the problem is that I think you'll see ISIS then reemerge in European cities, and so we may defeat them on the ground in the Middle East, but they may get stronger, Bill, in some of these European cities. I hate to say it, but look for more terrorist attacks throughout the continent, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. Remember, it doesn't take many people to launch terrorist attacks, whereas it does take many people to man an army. So they're being defeated. They were defeated in Mosul and Iraq. Although, in a way, it's a heartbreaking thing because we controlled Mosul when Barack Obama came to office. We were winning the Iraq war, and he withdrew American troops precipitously and without leaving behind even a protection force. And that's when ISIS moved in and took over all these areas for which American men gave their lives. And nobody in the liberal press criticized them for this reckless behavior. And now we're back again in Iraq as advisors, advising the Iraqi army, which is doing a good job of driving ISIS from these cities. But we will see ISIS back in European cities and possibly American cities pretty soon.
That's exactly right, and they can be very deadly, and as we've seen in different places already. Now, there is a ceasefire in Syria, which I believe is one of the consequences of the conversations between Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin. What do you make of that?
Hard to know. There is a ceasefire. There have been ceasefires before. We hope this one holds. Trump has a great deal invested in it because he has been, in his comments, somewhat soft on Putin. And I know there are a lot of people who are concerned. I am. I hope he has it right and that he can do business with Putin. But you'll notice he's playing the game of good cop, bad cop. He makes conciliatory comments. But Nikki Haley at the UN makes very harsh comments about Russia. Now, of course, the CNN crowd will say, well, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. They don't even agree. They probably do agree, and they have decided on a strategy of good cop, bad cop. You know, we'll praise you with one side of our mouth, and we'll attack you with the other, and let's see what you'll do to get more praise than attacks. That's an old technique. It might work. It might not work. But I have confidence that Trump is on top of the situation.
Yeah. Now, with respect to another part of the trip, too, was North Korea. Conversations between the president and the president of China. I'm not sure that's going to get anywhere, but it does seem to me that President Trump has advised everybody that what's going on in North Korea is unacceptable. So I'm not saying we're going to go to war, but I wouldn't be surprised if we raise the volume a little bit, Bill.
Well, he set down a marker. And remember that when President Obama set down a marker in Syria and didn't honor that marker, he drew the line in the sand and he let the other side come right over it and did nothing about it, he was widely criticized, and not just by Republicans. Now President Trump has set down a marker in Korea, saying this will not be allowed to continue, and he's got to enforce that in some way. Otherwise, he winds up like Obama, and he'll be criticized for the same thing. And I don't think he can afford that.
No, I wish what he would do, frankly, is to take out one of the missiles before it launches. I wish he would do something like that, very dramatic, and either shoot it down or explode it right there before it takes off. But I think something dramatic like that, I think, should be done. Just to deliver the message to North Korea that you can't do this. What worries me, Bill, is that one of those missiles is going to fall in a city somewhere and kill a bunch of people. I don't mean an American city. It could be South Korea. It could be Japan, Bill.
Yes, it can. It can happen. They have a self-destruct mechanism, and the missile is actually programmed to go into the ocean. But as you indicated, that can fail. It could be hacked. It could be a local commander has taken over control, and you could have a real tragedy. You could have a world tragedy. I think the thing that is preventing them from taking direct military action is the fact that Seoul, the capital of South Korea, is right near the demilitarized zone, in effect the armistice line, and Seoul is, because of its geography, almost encircled by North Korean artillery pieces and land guns. And that, I think, has had a very sobering effect on the administration, because if they do something, even if it's successful, the North Koreans can retaliate by attacking the millions of people in the city of Seoul and doing it very easily.
That's right. One more, this is actually next week when we will see this or read more about this, but Sarah Palin has apparently, is in the process of filing her lawsuit against the New York Times, and you've done some reporting on this, others have as well, and you still don't think she's going to win, but the fact that she's doing it and the fact that it goes wherever it goes, I think it's a good sign for Sarah Palin and a bad sign for the New York Times, Bill.
It is, and I've been reading Paraline on this, which is run by lawyers and good ones, and they feel that she has a case. It's very rare that you have a good case against a newspaper. It is very hard for a public figure to sue a newspaper, not that difficult for a private citizen. But there was a case in the early 1960s called New York Times versus Sullivan that set standards that were very, very high for a public figure to sue a newspaper, because the presumption in the law is that you must give newspapers a very wide berth to criticize public officials. And you can't have public officials suing newspapers every 2 minutes. Then you won't have true freedom of the press. So they set the bar very high. But there would probably be a jury trial to decide on the case. And the point has been made that even if she has a very strong case, the trial would be held in New York City, where most people are Democrats. And she would probably lose because she wouldn't have the majority of the jury in the first place, just in terms of politics. I think her chances of winning are not that great, but I'm delighted that she brought up the suit. I think it has taught the press quite a lesson, and she's once again shown how spunky she is.
That's right. Well, and I think you can argue she's not really a public figure anymore, or at least hasn't been for... I mean, I know she's a public figure, but not like she was still in office.
No, but she would still be considered a public figure.
Yeah.
She's a political figure. And once having been the governor of a state, it's pretty hard to argue that you're not a public figure. Vice presidential nominee, to be sure.
Yeah.
But you never know what could happen. You could get an honest jury, and you could even get a jury that wants to do the right thing. And maybe a justice will prevail. If the New York Times loses the case, that will be big news. That
would
be really big news. But I just have a feeling in the end that she's not going to win, but that she'll be given honorable mention for trying.
Well, and if nothing else, it'll make another newspaper think twice about it, because this particular editorial that they ran was not just partisan. It was just factually wrong. I mean, it wasn't that they disagreed with her politics. It was completely wrong what they wrote about her. So that's why I think she's got a case, but you're probably right. She's not going to win. But, Bill, that's going to do it for another Sunday. Thank you, as always. Thank you for your time, and thank you for the great work you do at Urgent Agenda. I have a feeling we'll talk about a few other things next week.
I think we're going to talk about a number of things, including some of the things we talked about tonight, but every week brings surprises with the new administration in Washington, and I think that the surprises may continue into this week.
Well, I've never seen anything like this administration, where it seems like there's never a downtime. I mean, there's always something going on, and it is truly, truly amazing. And if it's going to be like this for the next 12 to 36 months, we're going to be worn out by the time the reelection comes around.
I think we will be.
Okay.
We will be.
All right, Bill. Good night, and thank you as always.
Absolutely. Talk to you next week.
Thank you so much. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Time flies when we talk with Bill, so we just have enough time to say good night. Good night, everybody. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.